Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, the wait is over. After 2 years and a number of interviews here on For the People, the Greater Bridgeport Symphony has selected its new musical director. So stick with us as we pick up the conversation with Eduardo Leandro to let you know what he has in store for the upcoming GBS season. Then we're going to steer ourselves toward a pair of Connecticut Department of Transportation staffers engaged in an outreach effort to help educate state residents about the agency's active transportation plan. If you thought you could never have a say about how Connecticut handles transportation matters, listen in and learn how to lend your voice to improving things on our roadways. And as we try to do each April, we're going to bring back an expert to discuss 811 and the state's Call Before You Dig program that could not only save residents from utility interruptions, but also helps train and educate construction professionals on the safest way to operate when excavating. But first, Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo is excited to kick off 2025's must-attend event, the Wild Wine, Beer, and Food Safari. Mark your calendars for Saturday, June 7th, and get ready for an unforgettable evening with delicious bites, craft beverages, games, and live entertainment. Sip and savor hundreds of tastings from more than 40 top restaurants, caterers, and beverage vendors while enjoying live music, fun games, a premium silent auction, and up-close encounters with amazing zoo animals. Tickets are on sale now. Don't miss your chance to eat, drink, and go wild for a great cause. Go to beardsleyzoo.org/wild-wine and get your tickets now. Well, after almost 2 years and 180 applications narrowed down to seven finalists, I'm so happy to be able to introduce a former For the People guest who is now the new music director and principal conductor for the Greater Bridgeport Symphony, Eduardo Leandro. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
If you could hear beyond my earphones, everybody's clapping. You have a standing ovation. This is a fantastic, fantastic development here for Bridgeport and for Connecticut, I dare say. So thank you for joining us once again. This has been an exciting ride, and we're glad to have you on board with the symphony down in Bridgeport.
It is a great pleasure to be back in Bridgeport. I really enjoyed the season that we had together back in 23-24. And it was more than just enjoying because the musicians are so good in the orchestra, and therefore what you can do with them as a musical ensemble is so interesting and so exciting. But it's because it's a very interesting place, Bridgeport. It has a variety of cultures. It has a variety of people in there. That's just fascinating to me. And being a classical, quote-unquote, classical music ensemble poses interesting problems in how you integrate what we do as classical musicians with what Bridgeport has to offer and what Bridgeport as a town, as a place, as a culture,
yes,
it constitutes of. So that was a very interesting, eye-opening for me as well, experience back 2 years ago. And I'm just really so much looking forward to applying what we learned in that time and continuing to develop something that can really be, you know, meaningful for the place, you know, like it lives.
Mm. And you have interacted with musicians all over the world, starting as a very young person in Brazil, then off to university in Sao Paulo, then to the Netherlands, then back here to Connecticut, to Yale University. And now with all of the experiences you had between now and then, it really must be gratifying to be able to walk into a brand new room and experience the unbelievable talent No matter where you turn, whether it's in the Netherlands or in Bridgeport, Connecticut, the wealth of musical talent is boundless. But it's hard for people to think of a place like Bridgeport as having a rich inventory of spectacular musical talent.
Yeah, you know, music has like this amazing thing, right? Because it's a performance art, so you forcefully, you know, in a way, interacting with people whenever you're doing it, unless you're playing a solo concert in a recorded video, you're interacting with people around you. And music has this interesting thing of being at the same time a highly localized art form, you know, like where people do music in different ways depending on where they are, depending on, you know, like the social economic status, depending on the cultural background, but it's also universal in which, yes, I can go to a different country tomorrow, get in a plane today, get to a different country tomorrow, and start making music with people there immediately, right? So so it has like this, it's not a dichotomy, but it's complementary like thing of being both universal and local at the same time, right? So When you make music, you know, like with an ensemble, you know, like in Italy, you know, like for example, you know, like there's some different cultural aspects, you know, like at play in how, you know, like in how that goes, you know, like and in Bridgeport, it's different, you know, like, you know, for example, in Italy, if during the break I don't have a beer with the musicians of the ensemble, they're going to look at me funny. It happened to me before, you know, like, so, yeah, but I don't drink. So it becomes very difficult for me, you know, like to have an afternoon rehearsal after, you know, like an Italian lunch, you know, like, so to speak, you know, like, but Bridgeport, you know, like in a more serious way, with all its backgrounds, with everything that happens around there, is a very interesting, you know, like bad, so to speak, you know, like for different kind of music making. Mm-hmm. And some of the activities that we started, like, you know, like a few months ago with the orchestra involved, you know, like, yes, going to schools, playing with ensembles from the schools, you know, like introducing kids to music that's sometimes close to them, to their culture, but they haven't been exposed to, you know, like in a, so to speak, organized setting yet. Because the schools don't have that, you know, like, so, yes. Yeah, so we, you know, we enjoy going to schools and putting together a samba school, you know, like, which is from the Brazilian, you know, tradition, yes. A highly organized percussion ensemble, you know, like, it's not just party music. It's very organized. You have just almost like a string orchestra, you know, like each instrument has its role,
yes,
you know, like it belongs to a certain category that's supposed to support the other instruments, you know, like, and they all work together within their sections and as a total to make, you know, like an incredible kind of music, you know, like that has a leader that coordinates things, but it has like sub, like, so to speak, leaders that, you know, like control like their own part of it as well, you know, so you know, like what a better proxy for like a well-working society.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Something like this.
A lesson to be taken from that. And I'm so glad you brought up I'm so glad you brought up the sort of teacher-student relationship, because you know, sometimes it will only take an opportunity of 45 or 60 minutes in a session like you led in front of so many young people to change their lives in direction toward the arts and perhaps pursuing, if not a career, at least a hobby in music. And you yourself were so blessed with Gustav, who was coincidentally the former music director of Greater Bridgeport Symphony. Could you talk a little bit about your experiences with Mr. Meyer?
Of course. Maestro Meyer was, first of all, one of the most beautiful souls I've ever met. You know, like, I was very picky in looking for a mentor for conducting, you know, like, after, like, a few decades, you know, like, the career as a classical percussionist. because conducting and the business of an orchestra, they're complex. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's an inherent, there's a way with which music business interacts with music ensembles and the role of the conductor, the so to speak maestro, which it's a name I never call myself, maestro, and I prefer not to be called that, because it has all kinds of cultural background that I'm not very keen on reproducing.
Sure.
which is complex, so finding a mentor who had music, had like the score as the most important thing, and was able to remove himself from the equation of the music business and just be a venue, like a conduit for that amazing music to happen, which he was always so passionate about, was difficult to find. And that was, that's Gustav Meyer, like in a nutshell. Like this is someone who was not interested in fame as an international career. He was not interested in, in traveling the world and conducting a different orchestra every week, which he more than had the capacity to do. What were his priorities? Like having an ensemble that he worked with constantly, like what he did at DBS for over four decades, and teaching, working with young musicians, bringing his vision, of music and what it could be, to fruition. And so that, that fit with like what I was looking for so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
His lessons were difficult. We would sit for 3 hours in a silent room. There was no sound produced. Everything is in your head. Every sound you produce is just in our head. So there's no sound. There's no piano. There's no ensemble. There's nothing in there. It's just the two of us quiet in the room with every score memorized, I was just sweat and was like a real mental exercise. And we would work like just very intensely on technique, on basic things of conducting, on musicianship, in a very intense way. And he was never, Maestro Meyer was never tired, he had more to offer, and he wanted to just offer, everything that he could, each time. So our lessons would like go like up to like 3 hours, without any break, without anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I was just so lucky to be able to interact with him and to see him bringing all of his philosophy, all his thoughts into fruition in front of GBS when I would go and listen to rehearsals and concerts with the orchestra. And it was amazing to see, all of the ideas that we had talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Really applied to that amazing ensemble that was in front of him.
Yeah.
So that was very lucky.
Wonderful, wonderful recollections as well, and beautiful coincidence and destiny maybe that you are now standing in his place, or will be. You have done conducting with GBS to, as part of the qualifying process to land this new music director and principal conductor role that you now have. But just a wonderful turn of events to take you from being the student of the former GBS leader to becoming that person yourself. And it all really is going to the reality is going to hit on May 10th, Saturday, May 10th, appropriately with a concert entitled Something Big at the Klein Memorial Auditorium in Bridgeport, your opening night in this new role. Tell us what Something Big will contain from a program perspective.
Of course. So this is really a musician's concert, this is really like a concert that excites the orchestra. It's like repertoire that orchestral musicians love playing. And we just hope to exude that excitement and love for that music to the audience there. we open with this beautiful overture from by Felix Mendelssohn. That's to a Shakespearean play, Midsummer Night's Dream, that has this very tricky overture, very, very tricky. It starts very soft with the chords on the winds, and then it goes to a very soft but very fast passage on the upper strings, and it like explodes from there. So it's a real show off for the orchestra. And then after that, we have this amazing treat, which is the pianist called Andrew Armstrong, who's a friend of the orchestra and, you know, Connecticut, pianist who has a chamber music series in New Canaan and has performed at Bridgeport many times. Mm-hmm. And Andrew will be playing Rachmaninoff's Second Piano Concerto, which is, I think, the most beloved piano concerto, probably the best known piano concerto, like over there. And we end the concert with Brahms' Fourth Symphony, which is a piece that that has not been played by GPS in many years. And in the old Holiday Inn, downtown Bridgeport, I remember one of those three-hour lessons on the exposition of the first movement, on basically the first 3 minutes of music of that symphony, in a lesson that took 3 hours with Maestro Meyer, like right in Bridgeport. So I can't stop smiling when I think, it's incredible that I get to be conducting that very piece that we worked, so many years ago. And I had no idea then that, of course, how things would unfold. I can only hope that he has a little bit of a smile in his face wherever he is right now, going like, yes. I'm glad we worked on that, Eduardo.
The many wonderful circles that will become complete, effective with your May 10th debut with the orchestra. This is a spectacular. The program is called Something Big, and folks, we hope you will help Eduardo Leandro sell out this event. You can go to gbs.org for more information and tickets. If you'd like to become a sponsor, that will be great. If you would like to buy your season tickets or buy some for yourself and give some more as a gift, that is great too. And any donations to the nonprofit orchestra will go toward a lot of the additional programming and activities that go on. As Eduardo mentioned, the outreach into schools and things. I know it's early in the planning stages, Eduardo, but do you have a dream of a program or at least a particular composition that maybe you would like to bring to life in Bridgeport with the orchestra at some point during this first season of yours?
Of course. Oh my God, there's so much to unfold. Right now there's a friend composer who's writing a piece for a very unusual ensemble and orchestra, for saxophone, jazz harp, and myself playing percussion together with GBS. So that's a very exciting thing. We'll be bringing like this brand new piece by this young composer. It's based in jazz, and it doesn't get more, doesn't get newer than that, it's a premiere, in a concert that we're putting together with a few very beautiful American pieces, very important, the Appalachian Strings by Aaron Copland and some other music in there too. So that's very exciting. We have a piece for four percussions and orchestra. It's a percussion concerto, but all instruments played are in water. It's called a water concerto by a Chinese-American composer Tan Dun, who won the Oscar for best soundtrack for the Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, a few years back.
Yes.
We have also kind of reflective on the times that we have with. We're doing Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony, which is a piece from someone who was having a very difficult time having his voice silenced by his political regime at the time. Mm. You know, like the bureau in the Soviet Union, and it's a piece that reflects the struggle between the personal composer trying to like make his voice heard within a system that was very much intended to stop that voice from being heard.
Yes,
and how he reconciles that. We have like several younger American composers that will be performing as well, including Carolyn Shaw, who's just won another Grammy with one of her compositions for strings. It's beautiful, beautiful piece called Antakt, and you know, like and so forth. Yeah, so it's a good season. You know,
yes,
like
it
has. It has, it has like a little bit of things that, you know, like people can identify with and enjoy. And one thing that I always, that I think is so important in Bridgeport, you know, like is if you have never been to an orchestra concert before, what do I dress? You know, like it's in the Klein, I've never been in there, you know, do not be afraid, you know, like we are there to receive you with our open arms.
Yes, the music, you know, the music sounds as good in blue jeans as it does in an evening gown, right?
Yeah, and exactly. And I like to be comfortable when I go listen to a concert myself.
Yes. That's great.
You know,
well, thank you for the tease of what is to come and the setup for your debut with Greater Bridgeport Symphony as its new music director and principal conductor coming up at May 10th. At 7:30 p.m. at the Klein Auditorium. It's something big. Come and hear and see what their new music director, Eduardo Leandro, is doing and has in store. And get to know Greater Bridgeport Symphony through their website, gbs.org. Get your tickets, become a sponsor, give tickets as gifts. Perhaps a great idea for corporations to buy a block of seats or maybe even buy them to donate to your favorite charity. They may be having a raffle or some type of a silent auction. Lots of great opportunities to connect people you know with the Greater Bridgeport Symphony. I want to thank you, Eduardo, once again for another fantastic conversation. I can't wait to see you at opening night, and we will talk again, sir. Appreciate it. Eduardo Leandro, new Greater Bridgeport Symphony's new music director and principal conductor here this morning. Thank you, sir. Well, as we hit the midpoint of the program here, I'm so pleased to be bringing in part of the team we are hoping to host in this segment from the Connecticut Department of Transportation. As I was explaining to my new friend, Anna Bergeron, who is the Connecticut Department of Transportation's Active Transportation Unit Representative. This is the second kind of education opportunity I've had with members of our Connecticut DOT in the past 2 days. So it's great to have her. We're going to be talking about the Connecticut Department of Transportation and the new statewide Active Transportation Plan, or ATP. This ATP is going to be a tool to help Connecticut DOT fulfill their mission of improving lives through transportation. And when completed, the ATP is going to promote safety, accessibility, and connectivity by integrating a complete streets and safe system approach to both planning and designing, as well as building, operating, and maintaining active transportation infrastructure across our state roadways. We'll get into our conversation with Anna in a moment, but it seemed appropriate that we mark this month National Distracted Driving Awareness Month by reminding you that AAA Northeast is urging drivers to ditch the distractions to help combat the staggering number of distracted driving fatalities in our state and across the country. In Connecticut, between 2020 and 2024, there were more than 26,000 crashes involving a distracted driver. Over 7,000 of those crashes resulted in injuries, and nearly 50 were fatal. So AAA wants you to think about these following tips to help keep you alert. Avoid texting, emailing, and scrolling through apps while driving. If you need to send a text immediately, just pull over and park your car in a safe location. If you're riding with others, designate your passenger as your designated texter to respond to calls or messages. And if your driver is texting or otherwise distracted and you're a passenger, call them out for that behavior. Remind them it's unsafe and encourage them to focus on the road. All right. So as we said, Anna is with us today. Anna Bergeron leads Connecticut DOT's Active Transportation Unit, and she's the project manager for their Active Transportation Plan. So, Anna, welcome to the program. Let's talk a little bit about your unit. This is a newly created team at Connecticut DOT that's dedicated to advancing bicycle and pedestrian planning across the state. How are things going, John? So far? Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, John, for having me today. I'm excited to be here to talk about the future of biking, walking, and rolling in Connecticut. Our work is all about making sure everyone, whether they're on foot, a bike, or using mobility devices, has a safe, accessible way to get where they need to go. Our unit is fairly new, and it was created because DOT recognizes the growing need for better pedestrian and bike infrastructure, where more people than ever are looking for safe ways to walk and bike, whether it's for commuting, recreation, or daily errands. Our job is to make that safer, easier, and more connected for people.
Well, I have to tell you a personal anecdote, Anna, and I'm a relatively new owner of an e-bike, and I live in a fairly thickly populated area in Waterbury, and the learning how to ride the e-bike, I tried to go to places where there wasn't a lot of traffic, but inevitably once in a while I'd have to go out on the roadways, and based on my personal experience, it really appears that we've got a disconnect between motor vehicle operators and non-motorized cyclists, for sure. So I'm really glad that you're here on the program today to help all of the people who currently have to take to their 2 feet or two wheels in order to go where they want to go. So I appreciate your work, and I'm glad we're able to use our program as an opportunity to let people across the state know how they can get involved in possibly influencing the way your agency handles traffic planning in the future.
Absolutely. That's what we want. We want people to be engaged. We want safe accommodations for everyone. And we definitely want people to pay attention as the weather gets nicer. And you mentioned earlier in your opening remarks about all the safety issues on the roads. Currently, the weather's getting nicer. There's more light out in the afternoon. We are asking everyone to please pay attention to the bicyclists out on the road, children running around walking, and pedestrians who are really out there trying to enjoy their afternoon or the weekends and the great weather that we're hopefully about to have in Connecticut.
Yeah. So tell me about the ATP. What is the Active Transportation Plan?
Sure. So the Active Transportation Plan is a roadmap for improving walking, biking, and rolling in Connecticut. It's about looking at where we are now, identifying gaps in infrastructure, and making a plan to improve safety and access statewide. We did this plan in 2019, and a lot has changed since then. We're updating it now to make sure it reflects the current needs and priorities of our state and our residents. The goal is to create a more connected, safer, and healthier Connecticut where people have real choices in how they get around. Because safety matters, because health matters, and because this is the future. Too many of our roads in Connecticut aren't designed with pedestrian and cyclists in mind, and we really want to change that. Everyone, kids, parents, commuters, seniors deserve safe, reliable ways to get around without a car. So we're updating our plan, and we're looking to reflect on, like I said, the new needs and priorities of our state.
what I think is a beautiful collateral element of the ATP and the future of it, Anna, is that, you know, when you're locked in that cage of a car or even on a motorcycle or other motorized vehicle, you're either cut off kind of from the outside world physically or are moving at a speed that makes it hard to engage with folks that are moving slower than you. So when you talk about walking and biking and other types of micro-mobility use around neighborhoods and communities, the ability for people to walk more and scooter more and bike more is just another way for people to be able to engage more with their neighbors and their local business people and other folks who are out on the street walking and biking and such. So this is really the beginning of a new era of community building, thanks to DOT.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Sustainability and community benefits are so important. Less car dependency means less traffic, lower emissions, and more vibrant, walkable communities. All the health benefits of being outside, walking and biking, you know, improve physical and mental well-being for everyone. And this plan supports infrastructure that makes active transportation easier and safer for everyone. And that's what we're trying to accomplish with this plan and why this matters so much to us and to everyone, hopefully in Connecticut.
Yeah, and everyone in Connecticut literally can lend their voice to it. Let's talk a little bit about how you're putting the plan together, how you're developing it, and jump a few points forward as part of that answer to begin to talk about the role of public input. What's been the process so far in beginning to put this plan together?
Sure. So we do have a consultant that is helping us create this plan, and our staff at in the Active Transportation Unit, we're closely working together on this effort. So we started with collecting existing data around Connecticut. Now we entered our public outreach phase. In January, we held six public open houses around the state. We're hoping to also do a bunch of pop-up events and meet people where they are throughout Connecticut this summer. This fall, we're hoping to be out there again to meet folks on other open houses and pop-up events. So basically, we just don't want to talk about change. We want to hear from folks around Connecticut who will actually use these streets and paths. We would love for people to come to our open houses, again, like the ones we just had in January, the ones that are coming up in September. We're asking people what challenges you face when walking or biking in your community. What improvements would make you feel safer? What would help you choose walking or biking more often? So this isn't just about a government plan. It's about real people's experiences. The more feedback we get, the better this plan will be. So again, I'm asking folks if they're really interested and, you know, they care about safer streets and healthier communities and better walking and biking options to get involved, attend our open houses, advocate for better walking and biking conditions in your community. Your voice will help drive change. Follow us on our DOT's website, ctdot/ATP. That's the website for this plan. Our social media is always great and engaging. Please follow that if you can for more updates on the plan.
And since this virtually touches everyone who lives in or travels in or through Connecticut, it's not just about programs like this that are trying to reach people on a one-to-one basis or ads or social network campaigns. It seems like it's really important to engage things like community groups and advocacy organizations, but also to get businesses and other stakeholders leaders. I mean, it couldn't hurt for faith leaders to be talking about this from the pulpit because it has such a potential to both improve the quality of life for their audiences, but also the public safety is another critical issue, as we kind of mentioned in the PSA going into the program. You know, just 50 deaths in the past 3 years from distracted driving and 7,000 crashes. It's crazy out there. Talk a little bit about what you're hearing from pedestrians and other participants at this early stage that's helping you identify some of the two or three largest areas of concern that you already know you're going to need to address.
Absolutely. That's a great point, John. I want to mention that we are doing extensive outreach with community-based organizations around the state. We're going to also hold focus groups dedicated to communities and community organizers, where we're going to pull folks in and really engage in conversation with them about all the safety and information we're looking to capture for this plan. So again, this plan is important because it directly impacts public safety, health, and quality of life. When streets are designed for all users, not just cars, everyone benefits. So too many crashes involving pedestrians and cyclists happen because our roads weren't designed with them in mind. And we're hoping this plan will help us address those risks. And walking and biking are great ways to stay active and reduce stress. So having safe options will make it easier for people to choose them. And that's really what we're trying to accomplish here. And, you know, sustainability and also accessibility is super important. We understand that there's areas around the state where folks don't have access to vehicles, and their only way to get around to the store to run errands is by walking or biking. So how do we improve on that where everyone's lives are safer?
Well, let's.
And I think this plan will definitely be a tool that will hopefully get us there.
Well, it's kind of pretty universally understood when you say one of the main goals is to improve safety, but another thing that you're looking at is something that the average walker, biker, or resident may not understand, and that is infrastructure gaps that are contributing to either the lack of accessibility to safe travel or that could actually contribute to the problem. Can you talk about how what infrastructure gaps are and some of the ones that you're looking at to try to improve?
Sure. So infrastructure gaps around the state, as there are many. We are focusing on state roads with this plan specifically, as we're the Department of Transportation. We're a state agency, and our focus is really on our state infrastructure. So there might be gaps if you look at a road designed for cars and there's a shoulder there, but the shoulder ends at a corner of the intersection and it doesn't continue through to the next town, for example. So we have 169 individual municipalities in Connecticut. And from town to town, that bike lane doesn't continue. We find that to be something that should be changed, right? Because a road doesn't stop at the town border. It continues through each community, including a state road. So to provide that safe infrastructure, those gaps are what we're looking at. We want actionable things to come out of this plan. We want locations. We want to look at the state holistically and look at regions where those gaps are missing. And how do we connect folks from a community to community, from a employment center to a destination like a school or university, for example, where they don't have to take their car. They might be able to bike now or safely walk there. So those are the gaps, the missing links in our system, and that's what we're trying to fill, hopefully, with this plan, or better understand them so we know where to prioritize locations and where to, prioritize where our funds will go in the future.
Mm. As you're speaking about the 169 different municipalities here in Connecticut, I'm sure you and your colleagues at Connecticut DOT are grateful for the growing number of communities that are getting it and becoming real, true transportation partners, especially in line with the ATP. Over the past few years, more and more of them are introducing planning and zoning initiatives that are demanding that individuals who are building things like new strip malls, new shopping centers, new commercial centers, and even new neighborhood subdivisions and housing, part of those construction plans mandate the installation of things like sidewalks that include the necessary national mandated features for individuals with alternate abilities and handicaps.
Absolutely. And as we see more and more housing going up around Connecticut, we have transit stations around Connecticut. We're going to be looking into the first mile and last mile where those accommodations are needed and really connect the neighborhoods to transit hubs. That's super important. People should be able to walk or bike to a train station or to a bus station without having to take a vehicle, especially where we're building more and more apartment complexes and, you know, and there's mixed-use development. So absolutely, that is something we're also going to be exploring with this plan. How do we connect all those, you know, points of interest and where people are living, where they are shopping, and where hopefully they're taking transit?
We'd love to probably spend another 20 minutes with you or your colleagues talking about the ramping up of transit-oriented developments in Connecticut, but our time is short, so the last thing I want to do is make sure that everybody listening considers getting involved by going to your website to find out where maybe there's a pop-up event or to find out about surveying and other things like that, so everyone's voice could potentially get involved in the plan. Since we can't broadcast a QR code on the air, there is a website for people as an alternative, right?
Yes, absolutely. Please visit ConnecticutDOT/ATP. Please visit our social media pages, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We post our updates about upcoming events, open houses, any public outreach that we'll be doing this year. And just a final thought, I just want to say thank you for allowing me to participate on your show today. And I just want to mention that one more thing, that this is more about more than just sidewalks and bike lanes. It's about creating a safer, healthier, and more connected Connecticut for generations to come. And we're really excited about what's ahead, and we hope that the residents of Connecticut, you'll be a part of this. And we welcome you and your input, and please check us out and participate if you can.
The Connecticut Active Transportation Plan is evaluating existing conditions, identifying needs, and proposing recommendations for a functional, equitable, and safety-focused active transportation network on state-owned roadways, as well as supportive programs and policies in our communities. We hope you'll get involved. We were so happy and lucky to have an individual representing that unit. Anna Bergeron leads the Connecticut DOT Active Transportation Unit, and she's the project manager for this active transportation plan. Anna, we'll talk to you again. Thank you so much. All right. Well, as we indicated, as we do and try to do every April during National Safe Digging Month, we try to bring in a representative from Connecticut's Call Before You Dig, or CBYD, program. In April here, they're recognizing this National Safe Digging Month with an official governor's proclamation. And Call Before You Dig, of course, as always, is reminding Connecticut residents and businesses to conduct excavation work, who are conducting excavation work using power or mechanized equipment that state law mandates they notify Call Before You Dig at cbyd.com or get to get their e-ticket or call 811 two full working days prior to starting any work. Tom Bashaw is back with us. He's been on our program a number of times for this issue. He is a Call Before You Dig Vice President of Administration. Tom, thanks for joining us. We would just want to remind people before we get into our conversation that a couple of weeks ago, if they were listening to the award-winning For the People, they heard about Reframing 95. This exciting new interactive exhibition and walking tour opened on Saturday, April 5th at the Greenwich Historical Society in collaboration with Untapped New York. The exhibit features large-scale frames hung throughout the Greenwich Historical Society's Seaside Campus in Coscob and is bordered by I-95. It reframes the impact the major transportation thoroughfare has had on the historic property. The Reframing 95 installation is going to remain on view through June 30th at the Historical Society. That's at 47 Strickland Road. There's a lot more to learn about it if you want to check out our prior podcast on our radio station podcast tab at our website, or you can go to GreenwichHistory.org for more information. All right, Tom, we've got about 8 minutes and 11 seconds left for you, coincidentally, here. Thank you so much for joining us again, and great to hear your voice. So we covered the nut of it in the introduction. Tell us a little bit about how the past couple of years have been going with Call Before You Dig, success or maybe failures.
Actually, things have been going very well. We have some new things coming up. One thing, first of all, I'd just like to say this to remind everybody, April is Call Before You Dig month, as you mentioned, and it's very important that for homeowners as well as contractors, excavators, to contact CBYD at 811 or to go in and file their e-ticket at www.cbyd.com.
Yes, I guess many a power outage, gas leak, telecom communications interruption, or electrical issue has been initiated by an errant landscaper, even homeowner, armed with nothing more than a sharp shovel.
That's correct, yes.
It's not just about the guys that are driving the heavy machinery. Tell us a little bit about what people need to know about how close to the surface these important infrastructures are.
Well, for example, a gas line coming in from the street to a house, typically those can only be 18 inches below the surface. And so somebody digging with a shovel to plant shrubs is a good example. A lot of those are plastic, so they could be damaged quite easily. So same with electric lines. A lot of folks now have underground electric coming into their houses. So yeah. Those are important things for homeowners to understand.
Yeah. And from your perspective, I know, having talked to you so many times and your colleagues, that while the interruption to utility infrastructures can be an annoyance and expensive, it pales by comparison to the injuries and even deaths that are occasionally caused by people being unaware of where those infrastructures lay.
Yeah, that's correct. And, on our website, there is information. There's a tab for homeowners so they can get information on any projects that they're planning and, so that they can make sure it's performed safely.
So CBYD is a nonprofit corporation, and you're supported by all the utilities, but it's not just about a place for people to log in at cbyd.com or call 811 2 days before doing any digging. You also provide other services, which we don't often get to talk enough about here on the program. Tell us a little bit about how CBYD and your team has expanded its resources beyond just issuing those e-tickets.
Well, for example, some of the things that we started last year, We partnered with the Connecticut Technical Education and Career Systems. We awarded scholarships or scholastic awards to several students at five different schools. This year, we expanded it to 18 of the schools throughout the whole state. And they'll select a student from each school. The student will be awarded $811, and that can be used for their career development in the trades. So that's something that we're kind of excited about. And it helps get the word out to, you know, younger folks that are, you know, just getting out of these trade schools that are going to be entering the trades and be familiar with damage prevention.
That's great. Also, you have online reference guides.
Yeah, that's correct. There's we have new user guides. There's all kinds of information on excavator training where they can go, and what we have is it's called Education Access, where they can go in and take a course. Has a lot of valuable information, goes over the regulations in the state of Connecticut. So there's a lot of good stuff on that website.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people say, oh, there's so much, and not just here in April, but in August on 8/11, you know, there's two separate times of the year when organizations like yours are pushing the call before you dig message. And yet, you know, you'd think the common sense combined with all the promotion will mean everybody is aware of it. But excavation issues was the largest cause of utility-related deaths, injuries, and service interruptions in the country. And right here in Connecticut, you'd think everybody knows about it. Well, $200,000 in fines just a couple of years ago for folks who didn't honor the law in Connecticut and call 811 or go get their e-ticket.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, that's a big part of what we do. It's we have a committee, damage prevention and education, and a lot of the reach out activities are what's important to get the word out there, because as you mentioned, there's a lot of folks that aren't even aware of safe digging practices. I mean, people in the construction trades and the industry, they're familiar with it, but so many other folks, you know, don't even know what it is. So, you know, that's one of our efforts, getting all that, getting that information out there, getting it, you know, making the public aware of it.
Yeah. And also, you know, unfortunately, there may be assumptions on the part of a homeowner or a business owner who is hiring for contracting work that might involve excavation, the assumption that that vendor is well aware of call before you dig and is going to take care of everything. How much would you suggest the actual owner of the property be involved in the process of interacting with your office when they're hiring somebody else to do excavating?
Yeah, they can contact the call center. They can do it different ways. One, they can open up their own account. A homeowner can have an account with Call Before You Dig, or they can simply call or go to the website. We have information for private locating contractors where if there's underground electric or gas, things that aren't owned by the utilities, there's locating contractors that will come out and locate that. So it's not a bad idea for a homeowner just to investigate that for their own safety, their own protection.
Mm. And if their vendor or contractor has already taken care of business as they're supposed to by law, then the dispatcher can just tell the homeowner, oh, they're already all set.
Yeah, they could. It's not a bad idea for one, the homeowner, to ensure that the vendor or contractor coming to do work has contacted the one call system. The other part of it is the homeowner needs to be aware that there are utilities that could be privately owned by the homeowner that the utilities aren't responsible for and won't mark out. So it's a good idea for the homeowner to follow up with the contractor on issues like that.
Very good. It's as easy as calling 811 or going to cbyd.com to get your e-ticket. It's free and it's the law. Here during April, Call Before You Dig Month in Connecticut and National Safe Digging Month, our friend Tom Bashaw and his team at Call Before You Dig are working hard to pump up the information. And as always, Tom, we thank you and everyone involved in this cause to help potentially save lives, destruction, utility interruptions and others by simply being aware of what's underground or what could be underground and being sure that it's not going to get disturbed by calling 811 or going to see BYD.com anytime that anything is going to get dug in the ground here in Connecticut. So we really appreciate your time here this morning to wrap up our program, this first program in April. So thanks, Tom. Great to hear your voice again. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viet. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Vocat. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.